Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Tina Turner is no stranger to Switzerland. I met her backstage in the 1970s when she gave a concert in Zurich, while still married to her late husband and singing partner, Ike Turner. She had a very positive impression of Switzerland already back then, not to mention the appreciative audience. Since 1995, Tina Turner has lived together with Erwin Bach, her German-born manager and life partner, in the posh community of Küsnacht on the Lake of Zurich, also known, quite aptly, as the Zurich Gold Coast. Tina Turner has lived in relative seclusion there ever since her final singing tour in 2009, the same year that she also received the Swiss Music Award. She said then that she was thrilled and honored to receive an award that is usually reserved for Swiss musical artists. But with nearly 200 million recordings sold, and being such a longtime resident of Switzerland, the award jury apparently had no problem in making an exception. So now it's official. As was published as required in the local newspaper, Tina Turner has been granted Swiss citizenship by the Küsnacht Town Council. In Switzerland, one is first the citizen of a community, then a canton or state, in this case Zurich, and finally a citizen of the Swiss Confederation. The latter two are usually approved pro forma, unless the candidate is deemed to be a potential danger to the Swiss Confederation, which I don't think applies to Tina Turner. Switzerland is not a classic country of immigration, so becoming a naturalized Swiss is not an easy procedure. Depending on the canton or state of residence, the candidate must have lived 10 to 12 years here. In most cases, they must also pass a test in Swiss civics and show at least basic proficiency in the local language, in this case German. Tina Turner passed both hurdles, and I'm sure she will have no trouble paying the substantial naturalization fee. The Zurich Press has quoted Tina Turner as saying, "I'm very happy in Switzerland and I feel at home here. I cannot imagine a better place to live." I see no reason to doubt the sincerity of that statement, and a large number of expats in Switzerland would surely agree. But what does raise an eyebrow is Tina Turner's decision to renounce United States citizenship, which is voluntary and would not have been required, since both Switzerland and the United States allow multinationality. When I contacted Tina Turner's spokeswoman, I was told in a text message that the decision to renounce American citizenship had nothing to do with the new FATCA U.S. tax compliance law, which has overseas Americans in terror and panic because one of its provisions mandates the U.S. Internal Revenue Service, IRS, to pursue especially well-to-do Americans living abroad in order to collect U.S. income and wealth taxes, even if the citizen concerned is a dual national residing in the other country. Not surprisingly, Switzerland is near or at the top of the list. It must be made clear, though, that these overseas Americans are already paying income and wealth taxes in this country. They are not living here tax-free. The case of Tina Turner aside, we cannot forget that record numbers of dual national U.S. citizens living in Switzerland have taken the irrevocable step of renouncing their U.S. citizenship in recent months and continue to do so, because this is the only legal way that Americans abroad can free themselves from their U.S. tax obligations, at least theoretically, because official Washington refuses to guarantee this unconditionally. In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure. Here is one of those vintage items.
Oh, Africa. Just one part of the world lying within the tropical belt. In tropical areas, there are a number of diseases which are not found in temperate climates. These diseases, in fact, are so unique that they require a high degree of medical specialization to diagnose them and to carry on research into their origins and eradication. Most countries with tropical disease problems are in a state of development, and this includes their medical training programs. The Swiss Tropical Institute in the northern Swiss city of Basel was started in 1943. Today, the institute enjoys an excellent reputation for its work, which includes agriculture study, research into tropical diseases, courses of instruction for Swiss going into tropical areas, and diagnosis and treatment of tropical ailments. But why should Alpine Switzerland have a tropical institute in the first place? Here's the institute's founder, Professor Rudolf Geigy.
It was founded during the Second World War to avoid unemployment after the war, to create new possibilities for Swiss people going abroad, working abroad in overseas countries, mainly in tropical countries. And therefore, one thought we must make an institute where they can be trained, for example, as planters, as sugar chemists, or as medical doctors, veterinary doctors. This was the main purpose. And also to give general courses on tropicology, if I can say so, in order to enable people going there as employees also to better understand the special conditions in the tropics, to be prepared for that.
From the very beginning, it was obvious to Professor Geigy and others at the Institute that a lot of research work would have to be done in the field, in the tropics. Over the years, the Swiss Tropical Institute's presence in Africa especially has created a positive, friendly, and cooperative atmosphere between the Institute and the host countries. In Ifakara, Tanzania, the Swiss Tropical Institute has built a research station and a medical training center for the Tanzanians. And as Professor Geigy explains, the Tanzanian government came to him when they needed help in another way.
I was asked by the Minister of Health of Tanzania to help them to find out from where comes sleeping sickness in the Serengeti. People got the disease, employees in the parks, game wardens, game rangers, tourists and so on, and the government said we must do something against it. And we found it out now. We could now implement new protective measures in the parks to protect people against the bite of the tsetse fly. They have, for example, cleared the bush on the roadsides to avoid the tsetse flies coming into the tourist cars and biting people and so transmitting the disease. I can tell you that we are in really very friendly terms with everybody, from Nyerere down to the peasant in Ifakara. They all know us very well. We had never these difficulties which other nations had sometimes, because we are not sending only money. We are involved with our person in the work, you know. We go ourselves every year and we work hand in hand with them. I think this is the secret of real help to developing countries, to be with them until they say, now you can go, we don't need you anymore.
The Swiss Tropical Institute's work in medical development of the third world takes other forms too. James Adio is a young Nigerian doctor who studied medicine in Lausanne in western Switzerland and is now completing internship at a hospital in the Jura Mountains west of Bern. Dr. Adio also studied tropical medicine at the Institute in Basel, where he wrote his doctoral thesis.
Dr. Adio, isn't it rather unusual for an African to come to a country like Switzerland to study tropical medicine?
Well, in Africa, well, we say tropical medicine because that's the medicine on the spot in Africa. But in Europe, you have to remember that they are experts on this field. Professor Geigy had gone to Africa to do a lot of research. Well, in Africa, there are not so many people who are so much interested in research like that, because we are just developing our own research. But these people had done it, had brought it home, and then they just share us the knowledge. I think Swiss tropical medicine is doing a wonderful job.
Malaria, sleeping sickness, leprosy, three tropical diseases which strike fear into the hearts of those of us far removed from the tropics. Many of us think of them as incurable, fatal, something worse than death. And this dread of catching a tropical disease keeps many of us from visiting tropical countries. But Professor Thierry Freyvogel, the current director of the Swiss Tropical Institute, has a word of reassurance.
Basically, I think that we always are frightened about things which we know little about. And for many, many years, if not to say more, it has been an enigma to know how infections were spread. Nowadays, we know much more about it, and at least for the one who knows how a disease like malaria or bilharzia or sleeping sickness are transmitted, it is no longer frightening to know about such diseases. By the way, I should like to mention that it is no more dangerous to go to a country in Africa, in Asia, in South America, or somewhere else than to cross a street in one of our European cities.
One impression that we often have is that so many of the northern diseases, those indigenous to the northern climates, are easily or relatively easily cured. But these tropical diseases seem to be very often incurable. Is that true?
No, I would not say that they are incurable. Very much depends upon how quickly the diagnosis can be made. And this, again, basically is the same situation as the one we have with many of our European diseases. So if you take the example of sleeping sickness nowadays can be cured, and the symptoms will disappear completely, provided the disease has been detected early after infection. Only if the diagnosis is made late can the symptoms be of such severity that they are irreversible.
And Professor, what are the most common tropical diseases which you diagnose and treat here in Basel?
Amoebiasis, intestinal disease, which is due to a small unicellular animal called amoebae. Then, even more frequently but less dangerous, lambliasis, which again is due to a small flagellate animal which lives in the human intestine. Less frequent but rather important is bilharzia, again a worm disease. And then, of course, every year we have so and so many cases of malaria, which may be dangerous if not detected in time. And finally, we have quite a large number of various worm diseases, such as hookworms or whipworm or enterobius.
And you have a full range of drugs to handle most of these cases?
Of course, we have a full range of drugs for all diseases which we expect to find.
As Professor Freyvogel pointed out, the best personal weapon against tropical diseases is a good basic knowledge of them. Periodically, the Swiss Tropical Institute holds training sessions for Swiss who will be sent to tropical areas for various reasons, including activities of the Red Cross, the United Nations, and Swiss Development Aid. The courses are held here in Bern and last 2 to 3 days. One such training session was held recently. Dr. Leo Jenny is a researcher at the Swiss Tropical Institute and training course teacher. But in the space of 2 to 3 days, can enough be taught about tropical diseases to protect those who will be going to many different parts of the world?
Well, actually, basically, it's very difficult. For this, we're carrying the whole program and all the parasites in Indonesia, going through India, to Africa, and also the conditions in South America. And we try to
covering some basic problems dealing with hygiene and housing and also water problems and also food.
Let's take a location, Central Africa, let's take Eastern Africa. What would be some of the basic, most important precautions, things that these people should know before they go?
Well, in Central Africa, the main problems are malaria, are bilharzia or schistosomiasis, and beside this also bacterial diseases like tuberculosis and also another parasite transmitted by the sandfly, Leishmania, for instance. And we try to show to the people the relation between the insect transmitting these diseases and on the other side what causes these diseases. We also show them pictures how this disease looks like in human beings. So they are not scared about, for I think it's a basic problem. If we speak all about these diseases in tropical countries, all over the world, the pictures which occurs may be a black one, and what we try to do that these people are not scared to go to these countries at the end. So they know about what could be happening and what they can do.
Well, Dr. Yenne, as a matter of fact, are the chances relatively high that a person will pick up something regardless of what precautions he takes? Is this something that a person going to the tropics should think about, should reckon with?
Yeah, he should reckon that, but normally if somebody takes too much care about, he doesn't eat, he doesn't drink water, or he takes too much care, these are the people, they most get infected by parasites. That's an interesting thing. And so what we try to give them, it's a normal picture of these countries, and it might be possible that they can get some diseases, but normally the picture is not as bad as it looks like.
Is it possible, Dr. Yenne, to say what part of the world, if any, is really the most notorious, the most dangerous place to go in terms of tropical diseases?
Well, you will find these places all over the world. You will find them in the Far East, you will find them in India, in the Near East, Africa, and South and Central America.
The training course I visited had two teachers and 36 students. After the intensive course, how much understanding of tropical diseases does the student take with him? Two cases in point.
My name is Philip Egger, and I was born on the Lake of Thun. I will be sent by the UN volunteers to serve as a liaison officer in Niamey, Niger.
My name is Ernest Schalteke. I'm a Swiss from Rapperswil. I studied agronomy in Zurich at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. I'm bound to Madagascar to an FAO project for a rural extension service.
Mr. Schalteke, were you rather surprised to find out how serious some of these tropical diseases can be and how easy they are to get?
Well, I'm not surprised, but anyway, I hope that all the participants will be recovering very soon from this shock they had here. And I think a general moral resistance, not to be frightened at all, but just to be aware of the fact, is the best protection.
Do you think, from what you've learned here, that you might be in a position to actually help other people, perhaps the Africans themselves, the natives of the areas you'll be in, to help them protect themselves against diseases? Or do you think you have just learned enough to be able to help yourself, Mr. Egger?
First of all, to help myself, certainly, but if one will be under the influence of tropical diseases and one will pursue the study of these and understand their developments better, and I think after a certain while under tropics, with some more studying and some more information on the matter, one will be possibly in a situation where in certain specific cases one could help somebody.
Mr. Schalteke.
Well, I think knowledge about the disease itself is just one side of the coin. The other side is to cross the emotional or traditional barrier to these people.
Do you think that this course has been effective enough to actually implant into you a regular routine that you won't forget to use your mosquito net. You won't forget to take your anti-malaria tablets, for example. Will this become, from what you've learned here, a definite daily routine, a part of your life, Mr. Schaltegger?
Well, if I see Switzerland again alive, I could say it's effective enough.
And Mr. Egger?
I think it's very effective, but only as a first step. I think the sort of courses and dealing with that kind of information must go on in the tropics.
Give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
Malaria is no joke. It's one of the most common and widespread of all the tropical diseases. There's no vaccine against it. But malaria can be easily cured provided it's diagnosed at an early stage. Otherwise, in severe cases, it can be fatal. Since 1955, the Geneva-based World Health Organization has been waging an effective campaign to eradicate malaria. One of the WHO's top malaria experts is Dr. Gabriella Gramicha, who explains how the disease is carried and transmitted.
Normally, malaria is transmitted by a special mosquito, an Anopheles, called in scientific terms. When this mosquito bites a man who has malaria parasites, malaria germs, in his blood, this mosquito becomes infected and carries out in its body a cycle of development of this germ, which makes it possible for this germ to be transmitted by the bite of the mosquito on another person, and therefore to transmit the infection from one person to another.
So in other words, it is not the mosquito which is the origin of the disease, it is the mosquito biting and becoming infected itself from the blood of a human being which is infected.
Correct. The mosquito is always born non-infected.
And specifically, Dr. Gramicha, in what areas of the world is malaria most prevalent at the moment?
I would say in the tropical, in the equatorial area at large, which includes most of tropical Africa, fairly large parts of Asia, and a bit of Central America.
Now, Dr. Gramicha, what are the symptoms of malaria?
The cold, that is the shivering, the heat, which is the high temperature, and transpiration, which follows. These are the classical symptoms. A person is all of a sudden hit by headache, bone aches to some extent, and then all of a sudden shivering sets in.
And I believe, Doctor, that these symptoms recur in cycles, do they not?
Exactly. I mean, you first have the shivering, then you have the high temperature. After a few hours of high temperature, you have a profuse transpiration, and the temperature goes back normally to normal or even below normal degrees. And then, after a certain period, depending on the age of the infection or the species of the malaria parasite, you may have a recurrence. You have a recurrence of these attacks.
The mosquitoes you just heard carry malaria. They're in a container at the research laboratory of the Swiss Tropical Institute in Basel. One of the institute's jobs is to diagnose and treat malaria. Although there is no vaccine against the disease, there are anti-malaria pills, which should be taken regularly before, during, and after being in an infected area. But these pills are not always effective. This is what happened to Mr. Marcelin Goumont, a Swiss from Geneva. Mr. Goumont worked in South Africa for 18 months. He took a slow motoring trip back to Switzerland through Central and North Africa.
In Zaire, Mr. Goumont was bitten once or twice by a mosquito. A year later, he went to the Swiss Tropical Institute for a diagnosis by Dr. Antoine Degremont, a diagnostic specialist at the institute. Mr. Goumont, what are your symptoms?
I had fever, very high fever at the end of the day for about 2 weeks. It usually happened at the end at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening, and stopped at about 7, half past 7.
When was your first attack of fever?
It was in the middle of Zaire, in the middle of the forest, and I had this fever as long as I was in the forest.
What does this fever feel like?
You know, in the beginning, you feel tired, and then the fever, you can say, jump. It was cool, and then when I lied on a bed,
I was perspiring, the sort of thing?
Yes.
The sort of cold sweat, as we
yes.
say.
And then it was very, very hot. And after about half an hour, went to 1 hour, it was finished.
Dr. Degremont, what do you think of this preliminary discussion of the symptoms? Can you draw any preliminary conclusions from what we've just heard?
Yeah, I think that this patient has probably some attack of malaria, which begin probably in Zaire. I have to ask some more questions to the patient, and then I would like to examine him completely to see if he has some symptoms.
And are there any chemical tests which have to be made?
Yeah, then the patient have to undergo some tests, both on his blood and also on his serum, to see if he has some specific antibody against malaria.
And these tests, of course, will be conducted here at the Institute.
Yeah, we have a special lab for serological diagnosis.
Well, Dr. Degremont, please continue.
How did you take the Nevakin prophylaxis?
I took 2 pills per week.
And when you'll be back in Europe, during how many time you continue?
I stopped when I was in Spain.
You see, normally to have a good protection, you have to continue about 2 months when you are back in Europe. And except this fever, which looked like an attack of malaria, did you suffer from any other symptoms, like abdominal pain or diarrhea?
Nothing at all.
Now I examine your abdomen, and also I am looking the eyes, the mouth, the chest, and the legs, the skin. There is a certain evidence that it is an attack of malaria. And just after to have confirmed our clinical diagnosis, we'll give to Mr. Goumont some drugs to cure completely this malaria infection.
The diagnosis and treatment of malaria. Just one of many jobs performed by the Swiss Tropical Institute in Basel. If you plan to travel in or through a tropical area, know before you go. Contact your local health authority and ask what vaccinations and other precautions you should take. Remember, it takes only a few minutes in a tropical area to contract a tropical disease. And if you suffer from any symptoms, go to a doctor immediately and be sure to tell him where you've been and for how long. The success in treating any tropical disease depends on how quickly it's detected. But at the same time, remember what Professor Freyfogel told us before.
It is no more dangerous to go to a country in Africa, in Asia, in South America, or somewhere else, than to cross a street in one of our European cities.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.